welcome you to the first session of the Can You Believe It teleseminar. This is an exciting teleseminar for me because learning to use the power of belief has meant so much in my life. So many years I operated without it. It dramatically changed my life whenever I was able to harness it. I'm hoping that that's why you're on the call, and I'm believing that over the course of the next 4 weeks, we can teach you some of the techniques that we've used, that other people have used, that have been successful in turning their belief around. So what we're going to do tonight, before I put everybody on a group mute, I want to ask for a volunteer. I'm not going to embarrass you. I just need someone to answer a few questions for me before we get, you know, underway here tonight. So who's someone that would volunteer to do that?
Susie from Portland.
Thank you, Susie. Congratulations. I wish I was there to pin a big gold star on you for being so brave and to step forward. Susie, I want to ask you a question. I want to describe a circumstance to you. I want to ask you a question about how you would respond.
Okay.
I've got a 15-foot-long piece of lumber. It's a 2x4. You know what a 2x4 is?
Yes.
Okay, so I've got a 15-foot-long piece of lumber. It's a 2x4. And I'm going to lay it flat on the floor. Now, as you may know, a 2x4 is not really 2 inches by 4 inches. It's actually a little less than that. It's really more like a 1 and 3 quarters or 1 and a half by 3 and a half. So it's really only about 3 and a half inches wide.
Uh-huh.
But that's still wider than most people's feet are. And I don't know what size feet you have, but I'm assuming that they're less than 3.5 inches wide. So that board that we're going to lay down is 15 foot long. It's on the floor. It's 3.5 inches wide. It's wider than your foot is. And I'm going to ask you to get on that board, and I'm going to ask you to walk from one end to the next, 15 feet long. Would you have a problem doing that?
Not at all.
I mean, is it something you'd have to practice, or is it something you think you could do the first time you did it?
Oh, I think that being flat on the floor, it would be a piece of cake. I think I could do it the first time.
Okay. And you wouldn't hesitate doing it?
No.
Okay, now if I were to take the very same identical board and change nothing at all about it, still 15 feet long, it's still a 2x4, and I were to take that board and I'd go up 6 stories. I'm in a hotel tonight. I'm actually 5 stories up, so I go up 5 stories in a hotel, joining another hotel, maybe in Manhattan somewhere. There's 2 buildings close together. And I were to go from window to window between those hotels with that 15-foot-long piece of lumber, I would nail them very securely on each end into the windows so that the 2x4 was suspended between the 2 buildings.
Okay.
You're 5 stories up. Would you walk across that 2x4?
I'd think probably twice about it.
And you're very honest there, because we all would. In fact, if there's anybody on the call who said, yeah, I'd walk across the 2x4, you know, they're either very experienced at that or maybe they're missing a little bit. You'd think more than twice about it, wouldn't you?
Oh, definitely. It's not secure flat on a piece of ground under my feet. It's way up there with nothing under it.
But what changed? I mean, the board's still the same. You didn't have any problem at all navigating the board. You didn't fall off the board when it was on the floor.
No.
You didn't have any problem at all navigating it, did you?
No.
And I don't say this to embarrass you, and I appreciate you being a good sport about it, and thank you very much for volunteering.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to make a point, because I want you to stop and I want you to think about the things that in life that are very similar to that board analogy that I used there. There are times when there are things that we do not attempt to do simply because we believe or we perceive that we would fail in doing them. Now, the reason Susie didn't want to get on the board when it was 5 stories up is the same reason I wouldn't want to get on the board. First of all, I do everything I can to overcome it, but heights frighten me, quite frankly. And I would have a hard time myself. I would have to give it a long amount of thought before I, even 15 feet, and I've got long legs, I could probably do that in maybe 2 steps or, you know, 3 steps at the most. But I'd have to think long and hard about it, because I wouldn't have a lot of confidence necessarily in what would happen if I didn't step right or whatever. My belief would not be strong enough, although under other circumstances and under other conditions, the board being identical, the board being the same, I had no problem at all walking on it when it was on the floor, as Susie would have no problem, or you would have no problem. If we can change our perception of that board, and believe me, the people who walk on boards, the people who do things like that, certainly have a very strong belief about their ability. They don't see that board as being any different of being 6 stories up or 60 stories up as they do it lying on the floor. A strong belief can do a lot of things. First of all, it can impact every major life decision you make. I give you an example. 600 years ago, the prevailing belief in the world was that the world was flat. Now, there were a few people, radicals, who thought the world was round. But governments operated on the idea that the world was flat. Everyone operated, business, commerce, operated on the idea that the world was flat. If you were in the shipping business, you would never send your fleet very far beyond what you thought the edge was, because obviously you didn't think you'd get your fleet back. So you made business decisions based on that belief. Now, was the belief true? We know today that it wasn't. But it was a belief. That's how a strong belief doesn't have to be true in order to have the impact on your life. In fact, what I want to show you tonight and what I hope you'll discover in doing your homework is that a lot of the beliefs you hold, in fact, aren't true. Second thing a belief does is it enables us to perform at a level that we previously thought perhaps impossible. And you probably read our email about this call, you know, promoting this call. We use the example of Roger Bannister, my most favorite story about the power of belief, quite frankly, because it was such a feat. If you can imagine that particular feat, thousands and thousands of years it had been debated by the experts. And they all agreed that a human being's body was not designed to run the mile in under 4 minutes. There was just no question about it. It was not something that anyone ever looked like. Nowadays they have a pole vaulting record. They go, well, it'll be broken one day or whatever, or this particular record will be broken. But in those days, there was no one who, you know, believed that it was possible, except Roger Bannister, of course. And he developed a very strong belief, and we'll talk about one of his keys to his success was the fact that he prepared himself. And in week 4, we'll get into the importance of preparation as you develop your belief. You'll find people that perform at extraordinary levels are driven by a strong belief, but they always prepare well, and that gives you power in your belief. Another great example of how belief gives you the power to perform at a level previously thought impossible, a great example for me is the 1980 U.S. hockey team. And if you've seen the movie that was out, it's now on DVD called The Miracle. And if you have children, I would encourage you to buy that DVD. It's a phenomenally inspirational DVD. And even if you don't have children, if you perhaps like hockey or if you just like a great inspirational, motivational story, The Miracle is a great, great story. It's a power of belief. No one in the world believed that the little U.S. hockey team, as inexperienced as they were, made up of mostly college players, could defeat the powerful Soviet hockey team, which had been together for many years. They had been the very best in the world for many, many years. They were just a tremendously powerful team. The movie The Miracle is the story of how the U.S. coach had this great belief that there was a way to beat the Soviets, and he transferred his belief to the team and to the people around the team, and it's the story of how that belief grew and how he took it in steps. And again, in our lessons, we're going to show that if we start with small steps, we can build upon a small belief and develop a strong belief out of it. The third thing a strong belief will do for us, it will create an incredible, incredible attitude of persistence. Some of you on the call have heard me tell the story about Maxie Fowler before. And this story is in Cynthia Kersey's book, Unstoppable. In 1966, Maxie Fowler took the California bar exam for the first time at the age of 36, and he failed. He took it again, and he failed. He took it again and again and again and again and again, and each time he took it, he failed. He took it in Los Angeles, San Diego, Riverside, San Francisco, and anywhere else in California it was offered. And every time he took it, he failed. He took it when his children were still living at home, and then after his own sons themselves sat for the bar exam, he took it with them. When one of his sons started his own law office, Maxie went to work for him as a law clerk, and he took it again, and he failed. He kept taking the California bar exam even as he reached an age when most people are thinking about retirement. Over 25 years, he spent $50,000 in exam fees and review courses, and 144 days he spent in testing rooms. He took the bar exam for the 48th time, and he passed. He was 61 years old. He started when he was 36. He was 61 years old. Maxie Fowler always believed that one day he would pass the bar exam. His belief was so strong that it gave him the power to continue even when most people would have quit long, long before that. Now stop and think about how many people take the bar exam, and I've known people that took the bar exam three or four times and they quit, they never took it again. They had a law degree, they went to college for, you know, 4 years for an undergraduate degree and then 3 years for a law degree. They took the bar exam three or four times, couldn't pass the bar exam, they quit taking it. Think of people, maybe yourself, I've done it before where I've attempted things and after a certain number of failures, I said, yeah, it's just not going to happen. Maxie Fowler had to have a strong, strong belief in order to continue to persist to take the bar exam. A strong belief will do that. It will give you incredible persistence, what I call an unstoppable persistence. A strong belief can not only heal the mind and the spirit, but there are countless studies that we've seen in scientific journals of the role that belief has in healing the human body. In fact, one of the most significant of the studies was done at Duke University, which is a very, very significant university. If you're a Christian, you may know the story of the blind man who wished to be healed, and Jesus asked him if he believed, and he had the power to heal him, and he said he did. And Jesus' remark to him was, "Your faith has healed you." And the blind man was healed. You may know the story of Norman Cousins, who's a pretty famous author. And basically his story is about how faith, which is belief elevated to the next level, about how faith and belief healed him. And he was struck with a disease. He fended it off based on a regimen of nutritional and emotional support systems that traditional medicine didn't believe had a chance at all of healing his condition, and yet he believed it did. In fact, he's often described as the man who laughed his way to health. And his particular situation, he had a degenerative disease, and he was able to heal it and wrote a book about it after that occurred. And again, later in life, was struck down again with a near-fatal heart attack. And for a second time, he kind of turned his body into a personal laboratory. He refused morphine. He changed a schedule to include a lot of rest and a lot of other things that he had not been doing. He created a phenomenal belief in his ability to heal his body. And again, he was successful in doing so, and wrote another book called The Healing Heart as a result of that. There are countless, countless stories everywhere we look that are testament to the power of belief. Again, go back to the Talmud, to the Bible. The story of Moses is a phenomenal story of the power of belief. James Allen said, "Belief is the basis of all action. And this being so, the belief that dominates the hearts or mind is shown in the life." He goes on to write, "It will be found after a rigid and impartial analysis that belief lies at the root of all human conduct. Every thought, every act, every habit is the direct outcome of a certain fixed belief, and one's conduct alters only as one's belief are modified. What we cling to in that we believe, what we practice in that we believe. When our belief in a thing ceases, we can no longer cling to a practice of it. It falls away, from us as a garment outworn. What is belief? Belief, simply put, is to accept something as true or real. Now, I want you to understand the importance of that simple statement. It is the linchpin around what we're going to build the next 4 weeks around. Simply put, belief is to accept something as true or real. Now, when I was giving you the examples earlier, obviously, I used one example of belief that we know today was not a fact. We know the earth is not flat. We know by every imaginable piece of evidence that there is, including people in space, cameras in space, and whatever, that the earth is not flat. But it was a long-held belief. It was not true. It does not have to be true to be belief. There are numerous examples of dictatorships that flourished because of wrongly held beliefs. People honestly held a belief, erroneously perhaps, that allowed dictatorships to stay in power, continues in the world today. Doesn't have to be true. It doesn't have to be real. All it has to be is accepted by us. Over the next 4 weeks, what we want to do is we want to identify those things that we have accepted as true and real. We want to identify especially the ones that have been limiting our performance or have been limiting our ability to achieve. We want to identify them. We want to evaluate them. See, we've got to figure out, how did I come about this belief that I have? When you identify, a lot of times you identify the source of the belief, it will make it a lot easier to correct that belief, to replace it with fact or to replace it with the truth, the real truth, and not what you've held as true. After we've got in place the correction, then we have to create exercises that reinforce it, because what happened initially when you adopted that belief, when you accepted it, you reinforce it in some way. It didn't. A belief is not something that, upon first hearing, upon first seeing, generally speaking, is not something that you will immediately accept. It will take reinforcement over time. We have to create exercises and understand that in many cases, the beliefs that you hold, just like myself, are beliefs that have developed over a lifetime. And so it's going to take a lot of work on our part to undo those, to correct those, and then reinforce the correction. And I'll be very blunt and tell you up front that the people who 4 weeks from now are really humming with this and really have understand how to harness the power of belief and are making progress in overcoming the limiting beliefs in their life are going to be the people who take the time between calls during the week and do the homework. Because what we're going to go through is we're going to go through a process, and I think for some of you it will be like it was for me. It'll be cathartic. You'll probably cry a little and laugh a little when you really get into analyzing some of your beliefs as you try to determine how did those beliefs originate. And as you discover that, in many cases, you go back and you find the beginning of it. You may laugh, you may cry, you may do both. Because you realize that for 20 years or 30 years or 40 years, you've been holding on to something you thought was true, and then you now have the evidence of it. Now, let me ask you to turn over to page 5 in the handout that we sent out earlier this week. And I just want to read you Lisa Jimenez's quote here. This is in her book, Conquer Fear. Lisa's done some phenomenal teleseminars with us, a great book. I encourage you to read it if you haven't, or listen to the teleseminar if you haven't. She said, change your beliefs and you change your behaviors. Change your behaviors and you change your results. Change your results and you change your life. Goes back to what James Allen said that I wrote earlier, that belief is the basis of all action. It starts in the beliefs, which we know originated in thought. So for those of you who, like me, who love as a man thinketh, and we know that thought is beginning of all, belief originated in thought. Change the belief will change the behavior, ultimately will change the result, and the result will change your life. My challenge for many, many years was I tried to change my behavior. I didn't understand why I was behaving in some of the ways. I was very displeased with my behavior. I knew that the results that I was getting was as a result of the behaviors, but I didn't understand I had to change the beliefs that created those behaviors. I was trying to change the behaviors, and many of us focus on that. Wayne Dyer, who wrote in the book, You'll See It When You Believe It, said that you have to focus on what caused the behavior, what created the behavior. You cannot change the behavior until you change what created it. So for those of you who have a behavior that you're very unsatisfied with, behavior that you think may have be damaging to your career, damaging to your relationships, damaging to your health. For instance, let's take the smoking or weight loss or whatever, or eating, as a smoking or eating as behaviors. You cannot change those behaviors until you change the underlying beliefs. For about 20 years, I tried to quit smoking. I was, at one time, a three-pack-a-day cigarette smoker. I tried to quit, not really because I wanted to quit, but because the people around me wanted to quit, because the Surgeon General wanted me to quit, because everything seemed to indicate that smoking was bad for you. So I was trying to change that behavior, and I did quit smoking many, many times, only to start back after 30 days or after 60 days or after 90 days, usually of agony, and usually was not the happiest person to be around because I was trying to change a behavior. But I didn't understand I had to first change the underlying belief. While I was trying to change that behavior, but I hadn't changed the belief, it was impossible to do. It was like an immovable object that meets an irresistible force, and I felt like I was in the middle of it. When I changed my belief about smoking and about myself as a smoker, when I began to believe that I was a non-smoker, when I began to believe it, and I reinforced that belief, then it changed my behaviors. That led to the result that I wanted. I eventually quit smoking 12 years ago this December, have never had another cigarette, never wanted another cigarette, never even thought about having one, have not been tempted in any way, because I changed my belief. The underlying belief changed. I changed it just as strongly as the belief came in to begin with that I was a smoker. And because I changed it so strongly, it changed the behavior. I got the result, and of course, I believe that changed my life because it certainly added many, many years to my life. So we're going to concentrate on changing the beliefs so that we can change those behaviors. So if you're hung up on a particular behavior, if you're on this call because you're doing something that, you know, has been damaging or something that you're unhappy with, get excited because you have the key to the kingdom if you understand that changing your belief can change all that. Turn over to page 6, if you would, and some of you may have already completed this before the call. I hope you did get an opportunity to do that. If you didn't, please don't blow this page off. It may not seem to you to be an important part of a lesson on belief, but we really need to determine before we start, what do you really want? Why are you on this call? I mean, you saw an email or you saw something on the internet about a teleseminar about change your belief. You read a line, a sentence of copy, or you heard an audio message, or you read or saw or heard something that triggered in you an idea or a thought that this might have an answer for you in some way. What is it that you want? What do you really want? Not necessarily what you want to change. What I'm looking for is the changes, number one, and then the results. What kind of result in your life are you seeking? What do you want your life to look like? What has caused you to spend Tuesday evening, for some of you Wednesday morning? What has caused you to invest your time and money in studying this program? I'll just tell you, if you'll give some long, introspective, and specific thought to that, that'll be almost the value of the program there, because that's going to tell you what the strong motivating factor is that you can use, that you can harness to carry you through this, but when you get through this, to carry you through a lot of things. See, a lot of times we don't really stop and think what it is we really want. We know some results we'd like to see in our life. You know, we'd like to be debt-free, perhaps, or we'd like to have a new home, perhaps, or we'd like to have a new car, or we'd like to be married, you know, like to, you know, to get married for the first time or second time or whatever. We'd like to have a family or whatever it is, but sometimes we don't take the time to really go into detail and get specific about what it is. And quite frankly, a lot of times we don't end up with what we want because we really haven't given time to design it in the way that we want it. Second question, describe how you have suffered as a result of not achieving what you described above. Now, that may seem strange. Steve Siebel taught me this. Steve is a phenomenally brilliant, insightful guy on the power of mental toughness. And he's the founder of the Mental Toughness Institute. And he's coached, he himself was a, you know, precocious tennis champion as a youngster, and you know, then became a tennis player on the world tennis circuit. And he just really understands performance. And he taught me how you have to remind yourself of the suffering that you have carried around. Not the pain, because remember, pain and suffering are two different things. Pain is an organic physical thing. Suffering is your response to pain. So I'm kind of looking at your response, the suffering that you've had as a result of not achieving what you described in number one. You know, what type of suffering have you had because you've not realized the kind of result you're looking for in number one? And I'm just going to, you know, give, you know, an example. This is by no means should be your answer, but just as an example, if number one was a real specific description of how you wanted to live a debt-free life, of how you didn't even want to have a mortgage payment, of how you wanted to have X dollars in savings and you wanted to, you know, give X dollars a year to your favorite causes and whatever, and you had a very specific description there of the result that you were looking for. And then in number two, you detailed the suffering as a result of not achieving what you had wanted in number one above. What would be some of that suffering? Well, as you know, many of you know, for me, it was pretty dramatic to the point where I was evicted from my home 7 years ago. I lost my automobile, qualified for the earned income tax credit. It was pretty painful for me as a result of not living a life where I respected debt, a life where I understood the, you know, how to use money and made the proper decisions and whatever. It was very, very painful. And it helps to understand that suffering because, again, it can be a tremendous motivator to complete this process that we're going to go through over the next 4 weeks. I'll just, you know, be honest with you, if you're on this call, tell you that if you're successful, it probably will have been very painful along the way. And I think it's a great pain to have. I think it's a great experience to have it because there's so much that can come out of it. See, if I had to go through and live what I lived through, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 years ago, golly, I wouldn't want to do it, but I'd do it in a heartbeat because of what it taught me about myself and what it taught me about what I can do. But did I enjoy living through it? Absolutely not. In no way. And when I think about it now, it is very painful. But I also, when I think about it, I really thank my Creator for having the opportunity to do it because I know my life is so much better as a result of it. And then the third thing I want to ask you to do is I want to ask you to create a personal pledge, an oath, or a commitment. Whatever means something to you, not just motivates you, but what speaking to your heart, from your heart to your heart, what's something that's going to have something meaningful to you? I don't want you to look at this as just 4 1-hour phone calls over the next 4 weeks and, you know, this was another attempt to find a program that might be the answer you have. I want to see you have some life-changing results as a part of the process you go through over the next 4 weeks. That's going to take some commitment because there are going to be weeks when life is going to get in the way. There are just going to be things that are going to happen. There's no way around it. I'm in a hotel room tonight. I haven't had power in my home going on 4 days now because of a little hurricane that came through Florida. You know, fortunately, we were blessed. We didn't get any, no one hurt in our area and, you know, no really major, major damage in our area. But it's very, inconvenient. Life got in the way. I've had to make a lot of adjustments in my work schedule and in my personal schedule and everything because of that. Life's going to get in your way over the next 4 weeks. Things are going to happen. But if you've got a pledge or an oath or a commitment to changing your belief system, to beginning to do those things that it's going to take, and you make that pledge and that oath, that commitment to yourself, sign it and carry it around with you over the next 4 weeks, it'll make a big difference. And turn over to page 7, if you would, and let's look at the way that many of our beliefs are formed. And again, this is courtesy of Steve Siebold. This was a diagram that actually appears in the 77 Mental Toughness Secrets that you'll see that we'll be coming out with in the next 24 hours or so. It talks about how many of our beliefs begin with those people who are pretty much in charge of our thinking in the early days. Parents, teachers, coaches, ministers, friends. And, you know, they present things to us, present them to us as the truth. We accept them as true, even if they are, you know, completely wrong. We take those, we ingrain those beliefs in our subconscious, and we build our habits based on those. Now, I'll ask you right now, stop and think about this. And again, and this is just one thing. I mean, I'm not picking this subject. I could pick any subject, but this subject always seems to make everyone think very deeply. How many of the beliefs that you hold today about money were passed down to you? Now, stop and think about it. How many of the beliefs that you have about money were passed down to you? Wondering if you've ever heard, for instance, it takes money to make money. That might have been a belief that was passed down to you. That was a belief that was passed down through, well, just about everyone I knew growing up, not just my family, but even outside my family. It takes money to make money. Well, that's not true. I mean, obviously, there are people that have made money that didn't have money. There's untold numbers of people that have done that. Yes, you can make money with money, but yes, you can make money without having money. But if that's a belief that you accept as a young person, you heard it over and over and over. It came from people who you respected. It came from people who had, were pillars in your life. You accepted it as truth. Then what would happen throughout your whole life, and you stop and think about going into business for yourself, and because of whatever circumstances, you don't have that, much money to invest, you don't have a large amount saved, or you don't have access to a large amount of money, and you have this idea that you want to go into business for yourself, and, you know, it requires some capital to do that, and what would be a limiting belief for you about your ability to start that business if you grew up with the belief that it takes money to make money? I can tell you that many people have told me, that counsel with me, that one thing that's kept them from going into business, in whatever particular business, is because they have the belief it takes money to make money. Let me ask you another belief, perhaps, about money. Did you at any time hear as you were growing up, is it a belief that you adopted that money is the root of all evil? Certainly you've heard it. I mean, it's commonplace. But is it a belief that you accepted? Is that a belief that was held by those around you as you grew up? Now, first of all, we know that that's not what was said. People that quote that's not what was said. What was really said was the love of money is the root of all evil. But many of us have heard money is the root of all evil. Now, if you have this belief that money is the root of all evil, and you're out every day struggling to be successful, and you want to provide for your family, you know, you want to create a six-figure, seven-figure, eight-figure income or whatever, you want to work, you know, fewer hours than you're working now, you want to be in control of your destiny, you want a vacation once every month, or whatever it is that you want that has to do, that takes money to do it. If one of your deeply held beliefs, even though it may not be conscious, and understand this, a belief does not have to be conscious. Many of them, in fact, are subconscious. And that's why it's going to take this cathartic process that we've got to go through in order to uncover those. Many of the beliefs you hold, you don't realize until you really start analyzing your behaviors and what caused those behaviors or beliefs that you may not even consciously realize. I can't tell you the number of people that we've been on calls or we've been in counseling sessions and realized that they have had really this battle going on inside because one part of them had the belief that money is the root of all evil, while this other side you know, wanted the money to provide for their family, for the finer things in life or whatever, can you see where the struggle would come in? Can you see that if there's this subconscious belief that money is the root of all evil, can you see where that would be a limiting belief for you? Because what would you have a fear of? You'd have a fear of money. In fact, you would self-sabotage those things that happen in your life that might give you the opportunity for money. You would actually sabotage those because you would not want to be near anything that was evil. Now, you go down through this diagram that Steve drew, and we end up operating under false and limited beliefs, and we set boundaries in our life for our life, and we do it unconsciously. Most of the time, it is unconsciously. Now, before we too quickly give all the responsibility for our beliefs over to other people, please understand this. Many of our beliefs, we're responsible for the beginning of them, and we're certainly responsible for all of our beliefs, for nourishing them, and for holding on to them. All of those beliefs may have originated with someone else, even though there are some that probably originated with you, but they may all have originated with someone else, but we cannot pass the responsibility to them for where they are today. We must accept the responsibility for the beliefs that we have today, because unless we do, there's no way that we can change them. Also understand that while many of the beliefs that you formed were formed as a result of the influence of others, you have many beliefs that were formed as a result of your own experiences. Give you a good example. If there was an experience in your life where you were embarrassed or belittled or whatever by your peers, for instance, whether it be in sports or maybe you were, you know, giving a report in front of a class or whatever, could have been the beginning of a very, you know, powerful belief that today affects you. I believe the number is 55% of people have a fear of public speaking. Well, you weren't born with that fear. None of us were. In fact, I think there's only three fears that you're born with, and certainly the fear of public speaking is not one of them. Generally, we could see where somewhere in our early life we had an experience, because that's not something that would possibly be passed on from our peers or from our parents or teachers or coaches or whatever, but probably passed on as a result of an experience that we had where perhaps we weren't prepared for something. We stood up and the kids in the class laughed at us, or we read something and we didn't read well, we stumbled through it or whatever, and kids will be laughed at us. And over time, we developed a belief that we weren't very good at it. And that belief obviously has turned in now to a fear, which is nothing more than what? False evidence appearing real. Again, what is belief? Belief is what we accept as real, whether it's true or not. So many of the things that you may uncover as you go through the next process, the next page we're going to talk about, is the result of things that began as experiences that you had. And they were probably experiences that you had as a young person, but guess what? You probably had some experiences as an adult that created certain beliefs as well. And each time you have the experience, it acts to reinforce the previous experience, which makes it so difficult then to undo it. So that's when we get into the corrective process that we're going to have to focus on, because what we're going to try to do is we're going to try to turn it around in a very short period of time. Now, before I go to page 8, I want to ask you to do something, again, something I learned from Steve, and I really like this exercise because I think it'll show you the difference between truth as we perceive it and fact. Okay? Now, we know that there is one truth, obviously. There is one truth. But many times we accept something as truth. We operate on the idea as truth. In fact, it's not. The example was the world is flat. People operated that was truth. It wasn't. What I'd like you to do is I'd like you to write down 10 things that you think are fact. this is just an exercise to do, not right now, but you know, when we get off the call or between now and the call next week, I want you to write 10 things down that you know are fact. And then I want you to, after you've made the list, I want you to go back and I want you to reevaluate it and say, now, is this really a fact or is this a truth that I've created from my own or somebody else's perceptions of it? For example, you know, is it a fact there are 12 months in a year? Absolutely. Proven fact, they can prove it mathematical. It doesn't matter whether you think it's true or I think it's true or whatever. It's a well-known fact. It's been proven, you know, mathematically. It's the cycle of nature. So what I want to ask you to do is evaluate what you hold as fact in the light of, is this really a truth that I perceive or is it a fact? Is it a fact that you are a nice person, for instance? Okay, you wrote it down. I'm a nice person. Is that a fact or is it a truth you perceive? Is it a fact that the faithful will be rewarded in heaven? Is that truth you perceive, or is it a fact? So you can see by going through this exercise, what I want you to see is that many times we operate from the truth, what we perceive to be the truth, rather than fact. And what we want to try to do is we want to start operating factually. And so many of our limiting beliefs that we have accepted as truth are the opposite of fact. You have some capabilities, and if you carry nothing else from this 4 weeks, I want you to carry this away. You have some capabilities, some skills, some gifts that you have been operating under the false assumption, under the false truth, that you cannot be as productive in those particular areas as you can be, because the fact is, and we will show in a future session about how you gather the evidence around you to support your factual finding. There's factual evidence in many of the abilities and skills that you have that you could perform at a much higher level than you're performing now, but because of a perceived truth, you have created a limiting belief, and that's what we want to unload over the next 4 weeks. So now I ask you to go to page 8, and then I'm going to take us off group mute after that for a few question and answers before we go. On page 8, and please, 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 this is very important. In fact, for the 4 weeks to really make any sense at all, this exercise, you've got to do this exercise, and you're going to have to take some time to do this exercise. And let me just say to you, don't wait till next Tuesday afternoon, and the call's a couple hours away, and you know you've been pushed for time and whatever, and think that you can accomplish this part of the assignment in just a short period of time. This is going to take some serious time. What I'm going to ask you to do for each belief, I'm going to ask you to list. You will use one page, so you can make as many copies of this page as you need. And I'm going to ask you to take and evaluate at least 5 limiting beliefs that you think have had a significant impact on your life, whatever that limiting belief may be. Whether you've had a limiting belief that it takes money to make money, a limiting belief that I could do better if I hadn't dropped out of college, I just can't seem to get ahead, I never have enough time to get everything done. Whatever your limiting belief is, you may not even be aware that you have some limiting beliefs. When we're dealing with what we perceive to be the truth, many times it's difficult for us to see that that has had any limiting impact upon us. That's why this is a cathartic process. This is why it takes a tremendous amount of introspection. I'm going to ask you to think of at least 5. Now, the more you can do, the better. Use one for each page. I want you to describe the limiting belief that you've had that has had a significant impact on your life. Then on the next line, and this is when it gets fun, really, because when I went through this process, in some cases, I could almost go to the incident. I could almost go, I mean, it was so unbelievable that I'd carried it around, but I could almost go to the exact time and identify who was the person, the parent, the teacher, or what was the event, circumstance, or experience that led to the belief that you have. For instance, if it takes money to make money, Can you go back and identify where that came from? Maybe it came from more than one source. Maybe it came from more than one experience. I could do better if I hadn't dropped out of college. Where'd that come from? You know, when did you hear? Or what did you hear? Or whom did you hear it from? Or what did you experience? Go back and peel it back and identify that. The third thing, what do you say to yourself that reinforces that belief? For instance, I never have enough time to get everything done. What do you say to yourself when you're pressed for time? If you operate under, I never have enough time to get everything done, and I use that example in this workbook because that's one that I have battled. You know, I know the source of that. I know what I have to do. I work on it, and I've got an improved attitude toward my time now, but I have to battle a self-talk script that I created. What do you say to yourself that reinforces the limiting belief that you have? And you do say something, maybe more than one thing, but you have a script. When you are in a circumstance and you have to respond, or a circumstance is presented to you, you have a self-talk script. What are you saying to yourself? Fourth thing, describe your normal response to life circumstances as a result of holding this belief. You know, if you're a person who has a limiting belief, they never have enough time to get everything done, you have a response to circumstances when they're given to you and it appears that time is going to be a problem. Combine that with the limiting belief you have, and that results in your normal response. What is it? You made it through those first four things without too many tears, because it's really going to be painful sometimes. Stop and think, what would a new belief be that is the total opposite of the limiting belief? In my case, I always have enough time to get everything done that I need to. I always do. What is your new belief that is the total opposite of the limiting belief? Then I want you to create and describe a mental picture of yourself with the new belief in place. If that never have enough time is one of yours, create that mental picture of you being calm under whatever circumstances it may be, of you being calm and being able to do whatever tasks need to be done, that you do them in a timely way, but you don't have to rush, you don't have to be frantic, you always have enough time to get everything done. And then I want you to write a new self-talk script to support your new mental picture. I think you'll see that this process really is necessary to go from week one into all the rest of the weeks of this, because we're going to focus on what you identify on these pages is going to take us into our next 3 weeks. So, got questions about this exercise, or you've got any questions about anything we've covered tonight, or any observations? I'm going to take everybody off of group mute now.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay. How do I take the mental block when doing this exercise? Because I seem like I have a mental block of, even starting this exercise.
Okay. When you say you have a mental block?
Means that suddenly... no belief comes to my mind except the world is round and the God exists and this and that, you know.
Okay. I mean, all right, well, let's do this. We know this. We know that if you go back to what Lisa drew out, which is what Lisa said there, is based on James Allen, Napoleon Hill, and every wise person who's ever taught in this area. Remember, Lisa said if you change your beliefs, you changes your behaviors. Change your behaviors, you change your results. Change your results, you change your life. So, if you're having a hard time figuring out what the beliefs are, then you reverse the process. Let's go back and let's take a look at your results. You're obviously on this call because you're not getting some results that you'd like to have, or are there results you're having you'd like to improve? Would that be fair?
Yes.
Okay. So, let's start with those results. Now, and I'm not going to ask you to do that, you know, with this audience. That's for you to do. But here's what you do. You take those results that you're getting in whatever areas you're getting them in, or whatever you're not getting, okay? It may be that you're not getting any results in an area where you think you should. What you then analyze is, what behaviors do I have that are contributing to the results that I have? Okay, let's say, for instance, that you're in sales. And I'm just using this as an example. Let's say you're in sales, and your sales are, you know, so far from what they need to be. You're on a quota, for instance, and your boss is on you because you're way below quota and you can't make your quota and whatever. And you start looking at the results you're getting, and you determine that the reason you're getting your results is because you're not making enough appointments. You're not making enough phone calls to get appointments. You're not seeing enough people. You determine that that behavior, the failure to get appointments, the failure to make phone calls, is getting you the kind of results you're getting in sales. Do you see where I'm going?
Yeah.
Okay. So I now know the behavior that is giving me the result. In other words, I'm not making enough sales, and the reason I'm not making enough sales is because of my behavior. And what is my behavior? I'm not making enough appointments. I'm not seeing enough people. I'm not making enough phone calls. That's my behaviors. Okay, now, this is very real for me because, believe it or not, that was one of the problems that I was having, and that's one of the behaviors I was trying to change. I'm sitting there thinking, how can I make more phone calls? I need to be making more phone calls. And I was trying to change that behavior. I was trying to make myself make more phone calls. What I had to go back and analyze is, what are the beliefs that I have that have led me to this behavior of not wanting to make phone calls? Well, obviously there were some beliefs, and then, you know, fear of failure that was resulting in the behaviors that I had. I did not believe that I could be successful in making the phone calls. Consequently, I didn't want to make it. Remember, James Allen said that belief precedes all action. I didn't have a belief that I could be successful, so guess what? I didn't want to put myself out on the line to even attempt it. So if you're having a problem identifying what your beliefs are, let's start with your results. And let's start, and from those results, let's analyze what behaviors you have that are contributing to those results. Okay, does that make sense?
Yes, so you went backwards and...
I'm going backwards, that's right. If I know that beliefs change behaviors and behaviors change results, I can just reverse engineer it. I can go back and say, okay, well, let's look at the result I'm getting. What is the cause of that result? What kind of behavior causes that result?
What causes those behaviors is your belief.
Exactly. What causes me to act that way is an underlying belief that I hold. Now, that's where it gets painful because, you know, we can look at our behavior and it's not so painful. What's causing that behavior is usually where the pain is. So that's why this process is so introspective. You've got to be able to break it down and say, okay, this is my behavior. Now, what causes that behavior? What belief do I have that causes me not to want to make these phone calls? You know, or whatever your behavior may be. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you.
Good. Well, that is a great question. I'm glad you asked that because I think one of the hardest things for me was I was trying to attack my behavior all the time. I knew I didn't have the right behavior in a lot of areas, and I was trying to cure the behavior. But I didn't understand that belief precedes the behavior. You got to change the belief first, and you got to identify what that belief is. Good question.
Hey, Vic.
Yes.
Vic, it's John from Massachusetts. How are you?
Yes, sir, John. How are you? I was wondering where you were at.
I'm here. Hey, I think what'll happen with a lot of people once they start doing this, as I've done this before, and I think what'll happen is you'll start to drum up things from a long time ago, from when you were a kid and so forth. Just an example for myself was when I was a kid, I was a great athlete. Still am to an extent. And at one of my baseball games, I was on the bench with one of my best friends, and we were at bat, and I just got done going 4-for-4. Now, this was a kid, I think I was maybe 10 years old when this happened, but he looked at me and he goes, well, you just think you're the greatest player on this team, don't you? Now, at the time, I didn't think much of it, but as years went forward, I finally drew back to my, I don't know what the word, my inability to interact with people, I don't want to say aggressively, but maybe a little more assertive, was for the fact that I didn't want to lose a friendship.
Right.
So you start to pick up a lot of things as you start to drum up some of these old feelings. It's pretty amazing.
Right. Not that he meant it in any negative way necessarily, but certainly the way you perceived it and the way that it impacted you. And certainly he didn't mean it to impact your life in the way it impacted your life.
Exactly. But it's just small things like that that you just, you know, that's how far back I could trace it to.
Right.
And then I remembered it like night and day, and I remember how I felt, and it was a real eye-opener.
Right. Yeah. Most of these limiting beliefs that we carry around as truths, most of them started so innocently and innocuously. They were so small at the time. And over the course of time, we have reinforced and reinforced and reinforced. And for many of us, it has limited our ability to perform. It may limit your ability to maintain a relationship. It may limit your ability to earn income. It may limit your, you know, it may create health problems for you. One more question before we go.
Vic, it's Pascal. How do you relate beliefs to values?
You know, your belief is what you perceive to be true. And okay. So, you know, you're not going to have a belief that is in conflict with your values. So, you know, if you're going to change a value, obviously there has to be an underlying belief change in order to do that. For instance, if you have a value that, you know, money is evil, a belief, you have a particular value that money is not important, it's supported by a belief that money is evil, then you can't change the belief about money without changing the value.
Which one need to change first?
Well, belief is the basis of all things. I mean, obviously thought, as James Allen teaches, is the beginning of all things, but you know, you have to change your belief about a value. Or everything that you hold is based on what you perceive to be the truth, what you perceive to be true.
Right.
And that's why I want you to do the fact versus truth exercise that Steve devised, because you'll see that there's a lot of things that you have accepted as fact that are not really fact, but simply what you have held as truth. Your values are going to be based on what you hold as truth. If your truths change, your values are going to change. Make sense?
Yep. Thank you.
Sure. Well, folks, I can tell from your questions that it's going to be an interesting 4 weeks. Now, I want to ask you to do something. This will be interesting. I don't want you to say your name. I don't want you to say where you're calling from. Just as you go, and of course, *6 to unmute yourself, and maybe if we can kind of go one at a time just so we can hear this, if you have a limiting belief that you already have identified that you want to eliminate during this 4 week period of time, just state what that limiting belief is so that we all realize that we, you know, that there are other people who have the same limiting belief that we do. We're not the only ones. And let's just see what happens with this.
Hello, Vic.
Yes.
My limiting belief is completing tasks that I start. I started a number of projects, but for some reason I don't follow through and complete them.
Very good. Thank you.
I am not a good parent.
We're going to change that. Thank you.
I'm always late.
We're definitely going to change that. Thank you.
My limiting belief is that I don't deserve the success that some of my colleagues do.
A lot of people have that. We're going to change that. Thank you.
I never have enough money.
Never have enough money. Very common limiting belief. Easy to change. We're going to change that.
Thanks.
Believe in myself.
You can do that.
I can never lose enough weight.
You can never lose enough weight. Well, brother, we're going to change that.
I don't deserve to have my dreams come true.
I've heard that many, many times.
I can never enroll others in my ideas.
Change that too.
And when I'm prospecting, I'm wasting other people's time.
Want to restate that one?
When I'm prospecting, I'm wasting the the person's time.
Very, very, very important limiting belief to remove if you're in any kind of sales. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think I have another.
Okay.
I have a problem with doing that which I know I have to do, but I just don't do it.
Okay. We can change that.
I don't exercise regularly, I should say.
Okay. Get to the reason, get to the belief that you hold that causes that behavior. When you don't exercise regularly, that's your behavior. There's a limiting belief that you have that's creating that behavior.
Right. I don't have time to exercise.
And that's one of them. Go deeper. Go deeper. When it comes down to your health, there are some beliefs there, some beliefs that you hold that are contributing to that behavior. One of them could definitely time, but there's deeper than that. Go deeper than that. When you put that on the page, I want you to go deeper than that. One thing that I'll just encourage you and tell you, get your health right. We're mind, body, and spirit, as Bob Proctor says. You get your body right, you'll be amazed at how quickly the mind and spirit will respond.
I never do anything good enough.
Never do anything good enough. We can change that.
Not assertive enough.
Okay, we can change that.
Not enough time to accomplish the things we want to accomplish.
That's a biggie. That's one we can change.
If I
the list is always longer.
I'm sorry, restate that?
The list is always longer than I have time for.
Okay. Well, we'll expect one for each page now. Remember, one on each page. You'll have fun this week. Be a good process for you.
If I become successful, my friends and family won't love me anymore.
Hey, I'll tell you what. You'll be surprised at how many people believe that. You will be surprised how many people believe that. We are fearful of success because we're afraid we'll lose the love of others. Many, many people, maybe sometimes subconsciously or unconsciously, but they hold that belief. We can change that. Well, folks, I think you heard in everyone sharing, maybe some that I did anyway, some common limiting beliefs. I didn't hear any that I haven't heard before, and I did not hear not one that cannot be totally eliminated, totally changed, totally corrected. And so I want to congratulate you on your willingness to share that. I'm going to encourage you as I go and as you go, I want to encourage you to do the work. This week will be illuminating to you. It will be eye-opening. As John said, you'll be amazed at how some of your limiting beliefs originated. So I encourage you to do that. And I thank you for joining us and extend a great week to you.
Thank
Good
you.
Night.